This is Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson. It's March 25th, Wednesday, and Irish Illustrated Insider is back after a couple-week break. No changes at Notre Dame. Still a ghost town, to use Jack Swarbrick's words in a recent interview with Irish Illustrated. And we're going to start with that interview with Jack Swarbrick. I don't think that since we last gathered that it was officially announced that Notre Dame spring practices were canceled, and that has been the case. I did have the interview with Jack Swarbrick, guys, and what we used in the headline was, quote, there's no chapter in the manual for this, and there certainly isn't with the coronavirus.
No, it's, you know, Notre Dame, I think Swarbrick made this point in your interview that they were, I think, on the earlier side of the cancellation of spring practice. You know, that all sort of came together within about 24 hours. Because I think when you guys recorded the last podcast, it was still on, and I was in conversations with a couple parents of players, and there was some confusion about, you know, sort of why are you bringing everyone back so quickly? There's a lot of just sort of unknowns at this point. And then I think by the time you guys, this podcast was posted, or as you guys were recording it on Thursday of 2 weeks ago, they'd come to a decision that, no, it's out. And I think it was the timeline there was something similar to the NBA canceled on Wednesday night. And then NHL Thursday morning, Notre Dame Thursday right at noon. But yeah, I mean, Swarbrick is right. There's no real manual for this in terms of how do you recruit? How do you feed? How do you train? How do you get back in shape, assuming, you know, the football season does go as planned, that Notre Dame does play in Dublin? I'm not really sure what the workarounds were that, but they're going to need a lot of leeway with the NCAA, which seems like the NCAA will probably go there when it comes to eligibility and timelines and contact hours and all that kind of stuff, because Notre Dame and everybody else is going to need that.
Yeah, we speculated a little bit. I think Tim made the point that, look, they're just going to have to probably be Sunday or summer practices allowed.
Yeah.
And without spring happening, they just have to be ready for contact. You know, I heard NBA players talking about how hard it's going to be for them because they're not banging bodies. Imagine football. How many people will get hurt if you're not banging bodies to prepare for a season? You can't just go into a football season. It wouldn't just be little sprains and stuff that the NBA players might get if they have a truncated playoffs. But there's no manual, and we have no idea if the summer would allow this to happen either. There's no way of knowing this.
The first order of business that, you know, when we did the interview, and as you mentioned, Pete, I mean, everything was happening real rapidly there. Things were changing by the hour, and Swarbrick laughed about how he kept conference calling his coaches in the various sports, and his message had to change like every couple hours because that's how rapidly it was changing nationally. But you know, he said, well, first of all, the first order of business was getting the athletes home, the spring athletes. And I did a story with Link Jarrett, the baseball coach at Notre Dame. They were literally pulling up to Louisville. Here they were coming off a 3-game sweep at North Carolina, and they're going to mighty Louisville for batting practice. Louisville's a top 5 team in the country, and they didn't even get off the bus. They turned around, went back, and before they knew it, they were flying kids home. And Swarbrick said, you know, you're always looking at finances, but in a situation like that, it's just like, get them home and we'll figure everything else out after that. But he, you know, he also said that Brian Kelly was kind of ahead of the curve and was saying to Swarbrick, you're going to, everything's going to be canceled. Right. And Swarbrick was actually literally going into a meeting to determine that everything was canceled. And Notre Dame was the third football program to actually cancel spring practice.
You wonder how much their players being gone on spring break, nobody around South Bend really, if you're going away for spring break, but also out of the country, had to do with Brian Kelly knowing we can't do this. We can't be bringing people back to campus, because that had to be something that crossed his mind. When the campus closes down for that reason, your players aren't coming back.
Yeah, either. I mean, the university realized, okay, we're coming off spring break. A lot of these kids were out of the country, across the country. I mean, putting themselves, of course, when they're on campus, they would be exposed to people with the coronavirus as well. So, I mean, it all happened so rapidly, and it quickly, from an hour to hour basis, was determined that we can't bring the football players back. We can't bring any of the students back.
Yeah. And that was the semester was sort of put on indefinite pause with distance learning before I think the football program announced it. And as soon as Notre Dame says we're going to treat all the students this way for safety, there's no way in hell you're going to be like, but football come back. Right. So, I mean, it's a prudent, smart, safe decision by Notre Dame. And it was interesting. I think it was the last line of your story, Tim, about Sorbeck saying that, you know, he's been wrong about 80% of the time on this kind of stuff. Very rarely do you hear him talk about, things where he's sort of miscalculated or sort of viewed it one way and it went the other way. But I mean, this is unfortunately the world that we're living in right now.
Another thing that Swarbrick brought up was, in addition to go home, isolate, do what you need to do to stay healthy, online classes began this week on Monday. And, there's some concern there. Notre Dame's not an online school, so to speak. And so there's some concern there, especially with the student athletes, because that's who Jack Swarbrick oversees, that make sure that this is all handled properly. I'm sure they're computer savvy enough to handle that, but it's just another variable that you have.
Went to Notre Dame.
Yeah,
we're a student athlete.
A couple generations removed. Yeah. Jack can attest to my computer skills. But it's just another factor that Jack Swarbrick and the athletic department had to consider, that we have to make sure that they know how to execute, quote, going to class online.
Well, Pete and I know all about e-learning, right, Pete? It's been a blast.
Yes. It's been a real
young hoot. With kids. It's a real good time. Am I done? No, you're not done. It was one thing. I have a feeling.
Notre Dame, there's a story in the South Bend Tribune about a petition going around from Notre Dame students that, based on the math, seemed to indicate that about half Notre Dame's undergraduate body had signed somehow that they were going to move to a pass fail situation, which is not uncommon nationally right now. Just from a micro eligibility standpoint for the football program, I would think that Notre Dame football would be banging the drum on that all day. Cause like Brian Kelly's, it's not that long ago where he talked about basically every student on every player on his roster was an at-risk student other than Steve Elmer. I think it was summer, maybe 3 years ago.
Might be a slight exaggeration.
Yeah, slight exaggeration, but there's a lot of truth to that. If you just said 80% or 60%, I mean, it would be an eligibility nightmare for Notre Dame and a lot of other schools if the grades of this semester impacted your eligibility in the fall. Again, assuming that the fall goes on as we hope it does. I think it, from a Notre Dame standpoint and a Notre Dame football standpoint, that would probably be a prudent move because these are just unprecedented times that we're living in.
Drew Tranquil and Sam Mustafa were probably not at risk either.
No.
But it was still a good quote by Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's jump to a couple other topics here before we get into segment two, burning up the boards. But on the recruiting front, Notre Dame lost wide receiver Deion Colsey. He was verbally committed since October. Notre Dame still has a chance of him ultimately signing with them, but usually these situations don't work out really well. And there's a trickle-down effect there because Lorenzo Styles is the other, quote, receiver that is verbally committed, but I like him much better as a cornerback prospect, but it may prompt them to think a little bit differently. Not that they would play the exact same wide receiver position, but they are both wide receivers, and it might prompt them to think a little bit differently about Styles. Dante Thornton is another long wide receiver from Baltimore. I think Notre Dame would have a pretty good chance of landing him to, quote, replace Colsey. I made sure that I put my film review in when providing video evaluations of the other prospects, because Colsey's not a finished product. I'm not trying to dismiss the importance of losing him because, I mean, that's a tall receiver with tremendous upside, and it's a huge loss. But I remember when he verbally committed that one local reporter said he's a plug-and-play player, and he was never that. But he is a really good prospect, and it's a significant loss for Notre Dame.
I mean, I sort of view it as if you're trying to compete with Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, you can't lose these kinds of players.
Right.
It makes no difference if you're just trying to beat Navy and Stanford and Pittsburgh. So this is the neighborhood Notre Dame's trying to move into right now. when Clemson, Alabama, if they lose players like this, they have Dante Thornton and then probably somebody else on top of that ready to come in. Notre Dame probably doesn't.
Dante, like for Notre Dame, I don't know that they have another big receiver other than Dante Thornton, you know, right on their radar. So,
I mean, and the Styles point is a really good one too, because I wasn't even looking at it in terms of defensive positional flexibility. Cause like, look, if you were loaded at receiver, you could probably bump Xavier Watts over there right now, but you're not. Because you had a class of Cam Hart and Kendall Abdul-Rahman before them, which is not good enough at Notre Dame.
Losing Colsey also means that Xavier Watts and Jordan Johnson both have to hit for real at wide receiver.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing coming in behind them. And as you mentioned, in the Cam Hart class, Cam Hart's at corner.
Yeah.
Because of other needs. The trickle-down effect is what's huge here. And I think Pete made a good point, is getting into the new neighborhood gets harder when you lose a guy like Colsey. It's never the end of the world to lose one guy, but the problem is when you are reliant upon one or two guys in each class, then it becomes a bigger problem.
Well, and I realize that Colsey's, he's been verbally committed since October, so you kind of take that for granted and don't maybe hit the receiver group as hard as you were going to. But I mean, that's recruiting, man. You have to stay on top of it, and it just seems like, and we focus so much on Notre Dame that we micro-analyze it, and it seems like a Notre Dame acute problem, and everybody else doesn't suffer through that, and I'm sure they do. But not the elite programs, not to the extent maybe that Notre Dame does at times. It's a little bit frustrating. Jumping to a couple other, David Abiara, the defensive end from Mansfield, Texas, things are trending positively for him, for Notre Dame with him. Mel Kiper Jr. elevated Chase Claypool to a potential first-round draft choice, which, wow, that may be a little premature, but I really, he is trending so hard every step of the way. I wouldn't be shocked, although I know it's a deep and quality receiver core. So, although I wouldn't be shocked, I still don't anticipate him being a first-round draft choice.
I'm with you on Claypool. That for Claypool to be drafted higher than Golden Tate, that's tough for me to get my head around that. I mean, Claypool is a hell of a player, and I'm sure he'll make a good pro. But the scouting report on him was he was probably going to be a good number two for you.
Then he ran a 4.42 at the next level. Though.
Yeah, it's like there are a lot of 4.42s in the NFL. Maybe not a lot 200. Well, it's like, I don't know, was he 238 or was he 231?
He weighed in at 238, but he said he was more like realistic.
Big dude.
More like two, big dude.
He's a big dude. Second round, high second round, sure. But hey, it only takes one. Like with Jerry Tillery last year, he was a first round pick by four spots, I'm not mistaken. So, you know, if the Chargers don't take him, then he's an early second round and not really that much different other than the financials of it, which are significant.
It only matters to them.
Yeah.
it matters a lot.
That's something. But, Claypool is, he's certainly, I'm trying to think of like Notre Dame players who have had as good a draft run-up as he has, and probably Miles Boykin last year is the best example where he went from, I mean, what, fifth or sixth?
We feel about one of your number one seats versus a 16.
No, it is.
And Joe Schmidt registered.
I knew he was going to chime in.
A serious complaint with his matchup.
I have to admit, I thought Joe might chime in. Look, the whole thing was organic. I did not rig the matchups. That's what you have to say when you're a committee of one, right? but when I saw Joe Schmidt come up one on the 16 line versus Quentin Nelson, I admit I smiled a little bit, wondering if he was going to chime in on his matchup there.
He did. But, he chimed into me.
But look, what it's become with 1 through 16 and 2 for 15, I mean, these are ones, twos, and threes are legends of the last 20 years for Notre Dame. So they're going to win all the time. It's kind of became fun to see how good some of the other guys they were up against were, like looking at their stats, going back through it. I didn't keep stuffs until we all got together for the 2015 season. That was the first year. So I went back and did stuffs for guys like Darius Fleming and Justin Tuck and stuff like that.
How about Isaac Rochelle?
Yeah, stuffs? Isaac Rochelle was in on 40 stuffs, Pete. Of course, he played 12,000 snaps that year. You were tracking snaps.
Yes.
So that's he played more snaps than Notre Dame had snaps that season. But, yeah, there's been a lot of blowouts. Like, Kyle McCarthy had a great year as a 2009 fifth-year senior. His stats were out of this world, and he was against Jalen Smith. So I'm not sure if people even finished the Kyle McCarthy part on that one.
No. But one's an agent, one's in the NFL.
It will get more interesting as we get deeper
into it. Yeah, like Fuller against
11. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I do have an 11 seed defeating a 6 seed, though.
Yeah, you haven't told me that one yet. I'll wait to see what you say. Yeah, you have an 11 beating a 6. Pete, if you haven't seen, the bracket is now up. It's no longer hidden. So the bracket is out there.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen the stories pop up. I haven't seen the full-on bracket, so I'm going to check that out. Yeah, it's like I've tried to amuse myself by doing a all-time – or not an all-time, but my time on the beat, like basically your favorite B-side Notre Dame player team, like the player you really liked, even though he wasn't – like Quentin Nelson was not included.
Right.
You can't. Jalen Smith was not included. So I put out that question. There was a lot of interest in that response, but so it was just over the 20 years, but just some highlights. I had Jarius Jackson was the quarterback because there was a, somebody who followed me on Twitter said on Twitter, when I was a sophomore in high school, I was visiting my sister at Notre Dame. When I was in DeBartolo to go to class with her and was hungry, I went to the vending machine to get a Pop-Tart. And at the same time, Jarius Jackson was getting the same pastry treat. He gave me a nod of approval, instant favorite. Basically, I was looking for that level of connection with a Notre Dame player. So that's why you have like Pat Koontz is on here, Eric Olson, Chinnan Abenadukwe just for his hit on Calvin Johnson made it. Trevor Rulin for his the video that Notre Dame put out about the other players on the offensive line liking him. Vontaze Duff because somebody got a picture with him when she was a kid. So it was kind of a fun exercise to do as we're all trying to entertain ourselves and entertain our readers in this weird, weird time.
I was disappointed that my chiming in of Evan Sharpley teaching Declan a batting stance did not make him the quarterback.
I missed that.
That seems like split his head. When you put the bat over your head, you can drop the bat and split your head open. Declan's never forgotten.
I included Golden Tate on the team only because Golden Tate replied to my tweet wondering like, and just with a cough and then a gif of him being like,
yes,
why am I not on here? So I
O'Malley,
put it
you've got,
just O'Malley, for Michigan State band purposes.
O'Malley, you work with a hitting coach and you're contacting Evan Sharpley.
Yeah, he lives closer to me, man. There's this, he actually mentioned that. He's like, Priester can't do this, but there was a.
All right, Jack, sorry, long segment one. Coming back, segment two, burning up the boards. This is Irish Illustrated Insider. We are in segment two, burning up the boards, and we start with a question from Steve_Graberic. How is social distancing affecting the current team and recruitment?
From a team perspective, they have, at this point, in many states, I don't know how many states are in sort of shelter in place, like Indiana, but like there, you can't go anywhere to work out. I spoke to Julian Okwara yesterday for a story, and he's actually back in South Bend because he was working at Exos in Phoenix that had closed. And then, so he came back here to work out and he can't get into the Goog there. I mean, there's about five or six players here, like Tony Jones, Dante Vaughn, Okwara. There are maybe three or four others. They have nowhere to work out. They've sort of been like hopping the fence to the rugby field at Notre Dame. And just doing stuff at home. So pretty much all of Notre Dame's roster basically is in the same boat. They can't really train in any serious way unless they have a gym in their house.
And you're not really supposed to train together anyway, is the other option. You really can't. I mean, you know, maybe two people, if you're two people and you're living together or something like that, if Tony Jones and Dante Vaughn are friends and they're living together in South Bend, but you're not traveling to get together to do this training. So how does it affect the current team? 100% of the time.
every team in the country. Yeah. I mean, I did a interview with Sheldon Day a couple days ago, and he lives in the San Jose area, but he's in Miami. His girlfriend is in law school there, and his gym, they just closed. So he actually, one of the gyms he works out in San Jose is owned by Amir Carlisle and his father. And so Amir sent him like an in-home workout, but what's a 310-pound defensive tackle going to do? I mean, unless you have a gym at home, and a lot of people do. and you have to take advantage of that. But this is, imagine being a professional football player and you can't have access to a damn weight room. I mean, it's just,
yeah,
it's hard to even fathom what a guy does, because professional football players, especially linemen, you know, the less quote skilled players depend upon that on a virtual daily basis.
Well, I tell you what, they're better off being at home though, the players, because you have room to work out. And I just bring that up. I was watching something on the NBA yesterday. NBA rookies, almost all of them, no matter how rich they are, live in apartments. You are right. In an apartment.
Right. So
in a big city without access to any gym whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, that is just so much different. You know, if you're Sheldon Day, Mike McGlinchey, they may have, now they're young, but I mean, they may have put a gym in their house just because they have the ability to do so. I'm sorry.
Tim, ties into the second question.
Jim underscore Booney CRS. What's the direction and engagement from Matt Bayless and other strength and conditioning coaches to players regarding training and nutrition?
Yeah, I mean, certainly nutrition. That's something that Bayless and Notre Dame's nutritionists can stay on top of. I'm sure there's constant communication with that. And in training, I mean, it's more cardio, right? I mean, you're in a position to do cardio. Everybody's encouraged to go outside. It's going to be almost 60 in South Bend today. So I know we're getting outside today as much as possible, but there's only so much Matt Bayless can do if they don't have access to strength and conditioning.
Yeah. I mean, nutrition is a real issue for some, not for all. I mean, I'm talking to a couple assistants that used to be at Notre Dame who are now not, and about this, and they're just like, look, we have guys on our team, like, they go home, not sure where you're going to get, you know, healthy food at all. Never mind staying on top of workouts. I mean, I think Notre Dame is recruiting from a socioeconomic group that probably has more likely to have access to decent nutrition and the ability to work out. But that's not true across college football, I think, at large. But yeah, I'm not really sure what the Matt Bayless plan is that they've sent out. I know that there was a story on The Athletic that it's like North Carolina, Florida State. There's one other strength program, essentially sent their workouts to a couple of my colleagues and then they did them. And, you know, Andy Staples was pushing a truck down a street. But a lot of it was just like core exercises, find a duffel bag, fill it with books, do, you know, one-legged squats, that kind of stuff. I mean, you're maintaining the best that you can. And that's life right now. That's all you can do.
I always found it interesting when some Notre Dame coaches would tell us, like, a lot of guys we get here, you have to train to eat. Like, it's not just their eating habits are so bad that you have to change them. And when you go home, I mean, unless you're privy to home cooked great meals, your eating habits are going to wane as a 18 to 22 year old. You know, ours would have, right?
I know my eating habits have waned a little bit here in the last week. I mean, you know, you're at
my
home.
Drinking habits have improved.
Your drink, they've improved.
Yeah. I mean, it's like more of a volume issue now.
CMU which leads us to the end of the season drinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Gosh, as a man texted me the other week, if we can just get to the West Drift Hotel in LA, at this point, I'll take it.
Why would we? That's the only game this season.
Totally veering off, but why would you chug a Guinness?
If it meant we were actually in Dublin, I'll do it.
Yeah, I was going to say, but it goes down to kind of easy. You don't want to enjoy it, but
Well, that's true. Guinness definitely does.
PBR,
really veering off. Pete, you're up.
Okay, CMU Pens fan. While losing spring practice is definitely not something the football staff would want to happen, how much solace can they take in the fact that they have a fifth-year starting quarterback who knows the playbook inside and out and does not have to worry about undergraduate studies?
It's a good question, because if Ian Book had decided to turn pro, I mean, they would be fretting tremendously about, you know, not having a quarterback getting all these reps. Having said that, you know, Ian Book is still not getting reps, and he's still not getting reps with a bunch of young receivers that he has to develop a rapport with. So, I mean, his top three receivers are gone, right? Claypool, Fink, and Komet. So there's a chemistry that has to be developed there, and it's still a concern. But all things being equal, yes, you have a veteran quarterback that understands the offense. He's totally in tune with Tommy Rees. So they have that going for them.
Yeah, I think the wide receivers really needed spring more than Ian Book, but they needed Ian Book to be part of that. But as Tim pointed out, it's still better than it's Ian Book. You know, that they could really be in dire straits if you're looking at Brendan Clark trying to learn how to play with the new wide receivers. So, yeah, it's so odd that you would, you know, they just can't get two wide receivers to work out with Ian Book. It's just crazy that when you think about that, you know, there's so many trying to figure out how they over the course of summers, how guys get together and really hone their craft, and you can't even do that. So the undergraduate studies thing, I hadn't really thought about. Having a veteran team overall would kind of help going into the upcoming fall semester.
Yeah, a veteran offensive line. Yeah. Think if you were replacing three starters or four starters on the O-line, coaches would be going crazy. I mean, right. I'm sure they are. They are anyway, but
it would be warranted.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Pete made a good point about the offensive line. I think we were just talking at practice. This isn't the offensive line because they're all out.
Well, that's true.
In some manner, Robert Hainsey, Tommy Kramer, and Aaron Banks weren't participating anyway, so the cohesion wasn't going to happen. It was along the lines of developing some young guys and giving Josh Lugg his chance. But yeah, I never thought about the undergraduate study route. That's true. You have a veteran team, it helps a little bit when you get back.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine if this was 2010? This is Brian Kelly's first spring. I mean, this is what's happening at Boston College, Mississippi State, Washington State, et cetera. Like, those teams are in a world of hurt athletically right now. I mean, Notre Dame at least has its sort of culture up and running right now. I do think for Reese, it's significant. Organization, play calling, scripting, leadership, all that kind of stuff. I mean, this is sort of his a dry run more significant than the Camping World Bowl, in my opinion. And to lose that is significant. It's not like you can't overcome it, but that might be Notre Dame's biggest loss to me is the fact that Reese doesn't have the experience of running the whole operation for an entire spring practice schedule.
I think that's an excellent point. Mac 341, what happened with Deion Colsey decommitting? Do you think we have a legitimate chance to get him back?
I don't have a great insight on it. It sounds like maybe he wanted a little bit more love from Notre Dame staff than what was being shown. However, does that factor into Notre Dame getting him back? Certainly his mom and his family member, mostly his mom, wanted him at Notre Dame. I mean, he's at a pretty high-end private school in Athens, Georgia. So that helps a little bit. Unfortunately, he's still in Athens, Georgia, which is significant in a different way if he ends up just down the road with Kirby Smart.
How can you not be vigilant with the potential of an athlete like that that lives in Athens, Georgia? I mean, I don't know. You say he wanted more love. Did he want more love or did he just want more communication? Because what I'm hearing is that he just didn't feel like they were communicating well enough.
Yeah. And those are synonymous with me.
Okay. That's inexcusable. That if that is the case, and I'm not saying that that is absolutely the case, but if it is, it's inexcusable. I mean, come on, how many years into the Brian Kelly regime before that's recruiting 101 stuff. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's recruiting 101 stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, and as annoyed as we could be about someone needing a committed player, committed, quote-unquote, needing love or needing constant text and support, if it's reality, it's reality. And as a coaching staff, you have to follow that reality. Like, you can
read the room.
Yeah, you do have to. Everybody listening can say, well, that's really annoying. Who needs him? Well, you know what? Notre Dame needs him. And it is annoying. It is annoying.
Just don't bring this up. Don't bring up, well, that was really annoying after the Ohio State game in a couple of years. Yeah. Or after Clemson a few years down the road. Because that's when you're going to be like, man, Deion Colsey really would have helped the roster.
And again, I sound like I'm saying Notre Dame blew this, and I don't know that for sure, but I have been doing this for 38 years, and I've heard a lot of recruiting stories where, you know, this recruit, they just weren't vigilant enough. And if that is the case, that's just completely inexcusable. There should be a system, right? I mean,
yes.
Okay, we have a committed wide receiver since October. This is how we're going to handle his commitment and our communication with him every step of the way. I'm sure they have something like that in place, and I'm probably overreacting to this. But again, 38 years of seeing this, I know it's not an overreaction because I know it's happened before.
Epic Texas. It seems like Tyler Buchner is trending to be Notre Dame's best QB recruit since Jimmy Clausen. Why isn't that attracting more five-star receivers? Is Dell Alexander another Todd Light position coach, but with subpar recruiting?
Well, Notre Dame doesn't get a whole lot of five-star receivers. And I don't know how many.
Jordan Johnson was one. I mean, just well, because he got bumped down doesn't mean he's not.
Yeah, I always considered him a four-star, but he's a great prospect, there's no doubt. How many recruits really hone in on, okay, this quarterback's capable of doing that, so I'm going to go to that school. I'm sure probably more than I'm acknowledging right now. And Dell Alexander is not a great recruiter. Pete, can you comment to that? I don't think he's a great recruiter, but he's certainly a solid recruiter.
I think Dell is better than that, but look, it's Buchner is hurting than maybe in this class. I think that they're going to go to schools with great quarterback prospects doesn't really add up. Except in the case that like Jimmy Clausen would have been the exception to that, because he was number one overall. You knew who he was since eighth grade. Tyler Buchner isn't even the number one quarterback in this class, which isn't to say that he's not a great prospect. But he doesn't have the sway of what Clausen did in 2009, when I think they were just sort of like, I think he may have even helped with Michael Floyd a year earlier in his recruitment, if I'm not mistaken. It's that's a different situation. So I don't know. It's a difficult spot for Buchner to put it on him and say like, this is, they need him to be more involved, or this should have more of an impact. I think that these kids are all making decisions for their own reasons. And I mean, Georgia has a five-star quarterback committed now too, who I think is rated higher than Tyler Buchner as well. So if Deion Coldsey ends up there, is that situation. Next up, we got Coach Parsley 1. What receivers will start this fall? Is freshman Jordan Johnson a lock?
He's not.
He's a lock. He's a lock to be on the roster. He's a lock to be in the mix. See, Coach Parsley 1, you have to subscribe to Irish Illustrated. You wouldn't ask a question like this. Tim, fill him in on who the starting
receivers will be. At this point, you would assume Kevin Austin and Braden Lindsey going into spring would have been the staff's choices, and coming out of spring, they would have been as well. That's where the talent lies. Kevin Austin and Braden Lindsey are the top two. I keep harping on the fact that I think it depends on what style of offense Notre Dame goes to, because Lawrence Keys could be your slot receiver, but if you want to be a bigger offense and a little bit power-oriented offense, which I think they might have to do this year, you're in a two tight end set, and then is Lawrence Keys your first receiver off the bench, or does it become somebody else? I mean, maybe that's when, to be fair to the question, can Jordan Johnson get in there ahead of a junior Lawrence Keys, in that he's just bigger and more talented? Yeah. He can certainly get in ahead of Joe Wilkins, right? I mean, Joe Wilkins has not made the impact that would say he has a leg up on Jordan Johnson, but I mean.
Yeah, I think after the guys that you mentioned, Jordan Johnson can be right there to compete for playing time. I mean, really, after Austin and Lindsey.
I agree, yeah. And Watts lost his leg up coming in the spring.
Right, because of
that. I mean, that was his leg up on Jordan Johnson, was getting involved in the offense.
I just think in the rotation would be a win for Jordan Johnson.
Yes.
Yeah, and we say this every single year, but the rotation could be deeper, too.
Well, I mean, it's certainly something that they're shooting for. I don't think Tommy Tremble, Tim, you mentioned about tight ends. Tommy Tremble's not going to come off the field a whole lot.
No, and when I say two tight ends, I was assuming Tommy Tremble, but that gets Brock Wright on for a power-oriented
Correct.
Offense.
Right.
And I've still – we didn't see any hint of this in the first practice. There's only been one practice. But I still thought that Jafar Armstrong could be a slot option if they like what they had in the backfield, just because it – look, he's – I mean, he was a viable slot receiver until he went down with that first injury in 2018. At Wake Forest, he was making plays that first month, and I'm probably jumping the gun just because he didn't look good while injured last year. Looked a little stiff running the ball, but I think it's wide open who comes in after Lindsey and Kevin Austin. And boy, does Notre Dame need Braden Lindsey and Kevin Austin to be good players next year.
Yeah, Jafar Armstrong absolutely plays a role in the slot. There, you have to. That's a maximization of your skill set. Question from Paul Reavers. Will there be a game in Dublin? If not, assuming the season is not canceled or delayed, where do you think it will be?
I don't know if it'll be a game in Dublin. I would lean towards, at this point, yes.
With conviction.
Wow.
With no conviction. With no conviction. But it's sure. Far enough off where, I mean, if travel reopens and the season is going on, then it would come down to the situation in Ireland more than anything else, right? I mean, completely.
Yeah, I mean, you have travel. You have all the fans that have been planning to go there. You really have to keep that in mind because I mean
more it would come down to the country, how Ireland is handling the coronavirus, right. Not anything that has to do with.
I mean, it's March.
Lean towards yes, because it's March.
Exactly.
Yeah, we need a little bit of good news. If it was June, I would say, are you kidding? No, there's that. That's not happening. It's like the SEC hasn't fully postponed spring practice. It doesn't matter. They're not going to have spring practice. They can not fully postpone it all they want. They will not have spring practice.
It's, to me, I'm interested. Notre Dame has basically, I think, canceled all university travel abroad through August 1st. That's pretty close to the game itself.
It is. Sure is. It is.
So where would they play?
I'm going to say no.
I don't play. Yeah, I'm on board with the possibility of that. So do you find another stadium or does Navy just say, okay, we'll play at Notre Dame Stadium for the second year in a row and then we'll work out the schedule from there moving forward?
Maybe this is the time to do it in Annapolis.
I would love that. That's a bucket list type venue. I know not everybody would look at it that way, but I think that would be really, really cool.
Yeah, I don't know if Notre Dame would be totally, I don't know if Jack Swarbrick or Notre Dame would be totally against that. Under the circumstances, yeah. No, I they'd be totally against it under other circumstances, but it's almost like an olive branch, too, to have something unique about the game and not just host it again at Notre Dame Stadium. Dick Barone, CEO, who was or is Brian Kelly's best assistant coach?
Not Charlie Molnar.
Wow. We're gonna delete people first. Wow. He was first to delete too. There's another guy on defense.
He was his first offensive coordinator. Yeah, not Brian Van Gorder.
Okay.
I probably should have led with him, huh?
Yeah, good varieties of spice of life.
You guys did your top 10 not that long ago, and I thought it was a good top 10 with Elston. You had Elston 1, Lee 2, if I'm not mistaken.
I think I had Lee 2. Yeah, I mean, it was.
I think I had Lee 3.
I had him 2, and I think he won the.
You won the tiebreaker.
The tiebreaker with 2.
I think that's fine. You could make an argument for Lee number 1. I think there's probably some recency bias, but like, yeah, in some ways, Elston, how many points do you give him for kind of the decade of achievement? Because that's significant too, particularly where the defensive line has gone over the last three years. So I'll give Elston the nod at number one and Lee stick him at number two.
That's why I gave Elston the nod, just the trajectory of the defensive line. I think Pete pointed out a couple months ago, who in the world would have been able to say that the defensive line at Notre Dame is arguably their best unit 3 years in a row? That's amazing.
The reason for 33 victories in the last 3 years is as much on the defensive line production as any position, hands down, not close, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you saw what he could do as a emergency coordinator taking over the rudderless sinking ship in 2016. They became viable defensively, right? They stopped people with living, breathing quarterbacks all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It was a good effort by him in 2016. He had no chance. They just threw him in there. Along with Greg Hudson. Sorry, I want to make sure I give credit where credit
is. Well, yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, Greg Hudson was in name defensive coordinator, but Mike Elston, you know, he's a Brian Kelly guy. He understood the system. He knew what he wanted to do, and it was really Mike Elston that was driving the defense.
Let's just say that Jerron Jones, after the USC game, when he said, you have to keep Mike Elston as defensive coordinator, spoke volumes of who the defensive coordinator was at that point.
Yes.
in the hallway of the Coliseum.
Yes.
All right, this one is exclusively for you guys since you covered him or watched him. Brett Hartman, he wants to know, Derek Mays, overrated, underrated, or properly rated at Notre Dame?
Tim?
I think, I mean, if you're trying to look, if you were trying to use stats, he would be way underrated because the stats just look better nowadays.
Well, he played under Lou Holtz.
Yeah, Derek Mays is arguably the best pure receiver I've seen at Notre Dame. So I would say he's underrated in terms of catching the ball and making plays downfield. Now, 50, he didn't have Tim Brown, Rocket, Tate running ability, but like just catching the ball, Mays.
Now, he was a big receiver. I don't know what he ran the 40 in. He probably hung around the NFL a little bit longer than his numbers indicated or should have indicated. But in terms of, I mean, is there a better, I don't know that I want to go there, but I mean, in terms of 50-50 balls, they were 90, they were 90-10 with him, man.
And he was just a pure receiver. I remember reading in a season preview, and I think maybe Tim Priest or Lou Somogyi wrote it for Blue and Gold, that Derek Mays was the nephew of Mark Clayton of the Dolphins. I remember thinking to myself, good. He knows how to catch. He knows how to play out there. And he was just a natural player whenever they could feature him in the passing game. And I think it was Somogyi that said, Derek Mays always bugged Lou Holtz to return punts, and they never put him back there because he just wasn't a burner. And they put him back there against Florida State in the bowl game and returned a punt for a touchdown. He just came to the sideline like, see, I should have been returning punts this entire time. So I think we also underrate him as an athlete just because his nickname was Doughboy.
Yeah, he was big, man.
He wasn't on the Bayless plan, though, man.
No, he definitely carried some extra pounds. But, you know, he was also he was just a very charismatic football player. And as he started to excel, the interview process with him became that much more entertaining because, man, he totally believed that he was a big-time player, and he was.
Well, when you guys are proven right and there's no game in Dublin, I will do a 90s – tournament countdown on Irish Illustrated. We'll get Derek Mays in there, so we'll have nothing to talk about. That'd be great.
Question from Rich Marazzi. What's the deal with the men's basketball recruiting? I don't see any tenacity in recruiting and following up with guys in the transfer portal. Is Jack Swarbrick really okay with this malaise the program seems to be stuck in?
What is the deal with men's basketball recruiting? I kick it to you guys.
Malaise is a good word. It's grad transfers and South Bend High School players for next year. Basically, Irish Illustrated is, we're a little bit behind in our basketball recruiting coverage, and I intend to rectify that here fairly soon. But
you can't be behind something that doesn't exist, though, Tim. Also,
well, that's why it hasn't been covered, because it's not a topic that offers a lot of optimism or fresh news. Now, as far as the malaise of the program, they were 3-15 and now they went 10-10. They didn't beat anybody any good, but I mean, it's clearly the last segment of the season was clearly a program on the rise, and they weren't going to, I think we did this in a previous podcast or said this, they weren't going to make the NCAA tournament, but as the season was coming to a conclusion, they were, if you threw out records, They were a team from the ACC that probably deserved to be in the NCAA tournament, minus the resume. However, they had some opportunities coming up in the ACC tournament that, of course, were squashed.
And let me, I want to ask you this, because I got into this just a back and forth with Tom Noe, who covers men's basketball for the South Bend Tribune on Twitter. He described this season as successful, and I was like, I'll give you improved, but the way I described it, it was like if in 2017 Notre Dame had gone 7-5, that would have been improved, but it wouldn't have been successful.
Progress.
The description progress is good.
Right. I agree with you. I think they made significant progress because at the end of the season, everybody in the rotation, all six, were playing really, really, for them, were playing their best basketball pretty much, right?
They're playing better. They definitely made progress. They were definitely a viable NCAA tournament team. If for some reason, if they just beat Florida State in one of the two games that comes down to the buzzer, they're 11-9 and they probably get in because they won a ACC tournament game. Doesn't make you a better team because you win one of those games. They were a viable NCAA tournament team with a bunch of bad teams in the ACC. The year before, they were absolutely terrible. It is certainly progress. I don't know if it's a success. Well, you can argue anything now because they won their last game. But I don't know if it's a success. I think, Pete, I thought you were going to say when you said 2016-17, instead of using the football analogy, you'd have said, okay, remember when Notre Dame made the Elite Eight, and the NCAA tournament second round, would this season be a success right after that? Which is kind of what they had. The Bonzi Colson, Matt Farrell year where they're always hurt. That wasn't a success. That wasn't a success. It was unfortunate that guys got hurt.
It would have been a success.
It would have been a success, but you can't look at that and say, 10 and 10, they fought through, it's a success. It was just, no, there was special circumstances to this team. And I harp on this too much because they were terrible in December, and I was really glad Mike Bray said it because I thought maybe I said it too often. They stunk. They were still just as bad, and they were not that anymore. The issue is they lose their best player, and they're not replacing with anybody.
Yeah, I don't see how they can be better than they were at the end of this season. The final part of that question is Jack Swarbrick really okay with the malaise of the program? I think that Jack Swarbrick is okay with Mike Bray playing this out.
Yeah,
that would mean a maximum of 2 years.
I mean, his contract runs through 2024-25, does it not?
You know what?
It does.
But
I don't think that it's still playing it out, I think, in terms of real world, like Mike Bray's last class would be the rising juniors, the class that was supposed to be very good coming in as freshmen. I mean, if they don't two more years, you don't go to the right. NCAA tournament, you don't go to the NCAA tournament. That's playing it out. I mean, right? You've played it out by not making the NCAA tournament over the next 2 years, too.
Man, that is just that is a very dangerous game with your roster, because eliminate the rising junior class. What is that roster going to look like the way that they're recruiting right now?
First of all, the ACC, everything's cyclical in the ACC, and it was as bad as we've ever seen. I've said that 50 times. That's now 51. But the ACC's will bounce back, right? I mean, if it's a young league.
They're not all going to have bad players next year.
Right. North Carolina is going to be a lot better. They're not going to finish last. So the league will roll back. But Notre Dame probably won't, considering the makeup of their roster, without Mooney and TJ Gibbs and Rex Pfluger.
Mooney's the key there. Like I've said before, you know, TJ Gibbs had a good year, and Rex Pfluger was undervalued by people that just watched part of the game. But you got to be able to replace TJ Gibbs and Rex Pfluger if you're Notre Dame basketball program. And Mooney is not getting replaced.
And who leads that team? Who are the leaders of that team next year? Yeah, it's not Juwan Durham.
No, they don't have a senior leader. They won't. He'll be named the captain, because it's like giving out tips in Vegas. You just get to be a captain if you're a senior.
Dane Goodwin will be named a senior.
Gibbs,
a junior captain.
Named a captain as a junior.
You're right.
Because he's a mature guy. But, I mean, is he a – I mean, he's kind of a Steve Vastoria type personality a little bit too, and whatever. We're spending too much time.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We've got another basketball question. So Tim,
from Gerard, if Mike Bray does decide to step down as Notre Dame's basketball coach this year or in the next year or two, who would be your top three choices to replace him? This year, I can answer my question right now.
John Beilein
would be my number one choice to replace.
Obviously, he's an older coach, but he's a great college coach, and he would be, and he's available. I was really impressed with. I don't know if I've said this before, but I was really impressed with Pat Chambers at Penn State when they came in the injury plague season that you were talking about, Tim. And
I
know Penn State was just in the NIT, but now they were a front runner in the Big Ten this past year. It seemed like every time I tuned into them on TV, though, they were getting their butts kicked. So, you know, I don't know that this is a full endorsement, but I was really impressed seeing up close Pat Chambers' Penn State team, the physicality with which they played and the cohesiveness with which they played, and they're a better team since then.
I agree with those. I mean, you have to mention Inglesby just for the sake of what has Delaware done since he left? They have not made the tournament. They have not won the league, but they've improved their win total every year that he's been there. Needs to make the tournament to make this kind of jump.
Yeah, I don't think it's having studied what he's done, and you're right, they've gotten better. And then I believe they lost in the first round of the
They made the semis.
Okay,
they made the semis.
They played terribly and lost.
My concern with Inglesby would be more of not the level jump in coaching, but I mean, can he recruit to the ACC for Notre Dame to get back to where fans want them to be, which is realistically the fifth, you know, fighting for fifth place in the ACC and then breaking through once in a while.
How about Chris Quinn?
Yeah, I mean, that would be high on the list too, right? Like, I'm much less versed in like where he is as a coach. The only vibe that I got from him is that he may be in line for an NBA head job at some point in the near future. So that's, you're going to do that opposed to going back to Notre Dame. But I think Notre Dame would be foolish not to reach out on that one.
Yeah, I would agree. But again, recruiting, you know,
getting players.
He's been in the NBA. Yeah, he's been in the NBA since he left Notre Dame as a player and then a coach. So
that's fine. I mean, hey, where do high school prospects want to go? The NBA.
You know, well, that's like true.
Juwan Howard is recruiting just fine.
But you don't remember
the Notre Dame's detriment.
Tuned into the John McLeod era at Notre Dame, which it's apples and oranges. I get that. But anyway, right. Pete, let's finish up with one more question.
Wrap up with Cam Slam Savage, and he wants to know, when will this season's shirt be unveiled?
I was going to make a complete joke out of this because
– You didn't read the email.
See the email. There's information out on the shirt, man.
Yeah. You can pre-order the shirt now. And if you place your order by April 3rd, however, through this Notre Dame Club of St. Joe Valley, they are not accepting check payments this year for safety issues. And yet it's free shipping if you pick your shirt up in person at a future Notre Dame St. Joe Valley Club event. So I don't know what the shirt's going to look like, but there's not going to be the big reveal at 80 Street Commons before the Blue Gold game doesn't exist.
No, hopefully it will not be a collector's edition shirt. Like my George, it's O'Leary when they hired O'Leary. I still have that shirt my dad sent me. So that is a collector's edition
fit?
Shirt.
I bet it doesn't fit.
I was an adult. Wow.
That's a long time ago, man.
I will wear that for the next podcast. How's that?
All right. And speaking of next podcast, not exactly sure when it's coming. It may be 2 weeks. But with our remote hookup, which is probably ultimately going to become our permanent way of handling the podcast, depending upon how this one ends up, we may have something. Jack, do you have any opinion on that? He's on mute. Here we go.
You can do one in 2 weeks.
Okay. We're looking at 2 weeks, whether it's maybe a Thursday instead of a Wednesday, but we'll subscribe to Irish Illustrated and you'll have all that information as to when the next one is. I say that a lot, don't I? All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate everybody that's listening. We appreciate it. And join us again next time for Irish Illustrated Insider.
Thank you for listening to the Irish Illustrated Insider podcast. If you enjoy our coverage of Notre Dame football, please consider supporting the podcast with a small donation. Go to irishillustrated.com/support. Your support will help Irish Illustrated continue to be the leader in coverage of Notre Dame athletics.